For me, we're starting a new series, if you didn't know that already. It's called Take the Plunge. And can we just pop the artwork back up just for a second? I know you've already kind of seen it subliminally, but this was kind of the idea and the point there being that some people fully clothed, just for those of you who are always nervous, have jumped into water over their heads, which we all love. I mean, some of you are averse to that, but most people love the thought of that and love even crazy ideas. We were, somewhere a few months ago in another part of America, and the word came back that some of our group had gone out and jumped off a cliff on the most southern part of the island, and it was big news, and everybody was fired up because we went and we, like, cliff jumped. I don't know if anybody cliff dived, but they all cliff jumped. Anybody cliff jumped before? You know, it's just crazy and insane. Anybody who would do something like that, where you're just leaping into the air, hoping like crazy, and I think you've probably checked it out ahead of time, that the depth of the water is sufficient to hold you at the bottom of this adventure. And there's something about that that, you know, the conservative ones among us are like, I would never do that. It's an unnecessary risk. That's Matt Redman. And I don't mean that to make fun of him, and I didn't plan that ahead of time, but he has a phrase called, it's an unnecessary risk, mate. And he doesn't take any unnecessary risk, mate, and jumping off a cliff is an unnecessary risk. There are other people here, and they're like, I don't even need to know how deep the water is. I'll figure it out on the way down. Can we just see a show of hands for those people here? You know who you are. You're like, just point me in the right direction, and I'm airborne. And then the rest of us are somewhere in between. We're willing to get wet. We're willing to take a jump, but we kind of might ask a few questions. And, you know, if you've ever been there before and you kind of stand there and you want to jump, but your body says no and your brain says yes, you know, have you been there before? Remember the first bungee we did? It was not very smart. I had to answer to Shelly's parents for it, which was not a pleasant thing. News leaked back to them. We didn't tell them, but they found out another way. We bungeed not over the Victoria Falls Gorge or over some amazing scenic thing. We bungeed off of like just a construction crane in Colorado with 2 inches of snow on the ground. Not smart. Unnecessary risk. Wouldn't do it again, but I don't know what happened then. I think David Bell, some of you know, working on our tech team, kind of got to me, and we started a little competition. We decided we were going to bungee jump. Remember getting to that moment, and it wasn't all that high. I mean, it was only maybe 60 feet off the ground or whatever, and I remember that moment where they count you down because they know you're not going to do it, and they don't have time for you to stand up there and mess around. So it's, you know, people, 3, 2, 1, and at 1, my brain said, okay, go for it. My body said, no, we're not doing this. We're not going to do it. I'm serious. Like, my brain said everything that normally happens in you when you jump, and the body was just like, no, we're not doing that. We're not going to do that at all. People are like, okay, we'll give you one more shot, you know, 3. You know, that's that moment. And that's kind of the moment we want to wade into for the next few weeks together. Not crazy, blind, reckless, I'm just going to haul off and do something and just kind of figure it out on the way down. But definitely not conservative. I just really need everything to add up and measure up, and I need all the information and all the facts, and I need to talk to 100 people who've done it before I'm even willing to think about doing it. Not that either. Because in our journey with Jesus, there is a massive invitation on the table. And the invitation from Christ to me and from Christ to you tonight is to come on into the deep end of the pool. And that's where he wants us to be. That's where he lives. That's what the kingdom really is all about. And that's what the world's looking for on top of it all. And somehow we've sort of whittled it down to a whole lot less than that, haven't we? We're sort of in shallow waters, safe circumstances, where nothing really is at risk, where everything's sort of still under our control. We worship God, we acknowledge him, but come on, we're still at the controls. And then we read the pages and we read about the stuff, and we know there's a gap between where we are and what we hear about. We know deep down there's a gap between what we're experiencing and what we've been told you can experience with God. And somehow in that gap is an invitation to you and me, and that invitation is from Christ himself, and he is saying to you, come on down to the deep end of the pool. because down here, the water is deep and it's over your head and the current is strong. But down here, this is where the kingdom is. This is where life is. This is where I am. And I want you to experience the power of being in the flow with me. We're looking at a passage in the Old Testament from one of the prophets named Ezekiel tonight. And in Ezekiel 47, there's an incredible prophecy that happens of the end times. And I know we start talking about end time prophecy and a lot of people get super fired up and a whole lot of other people just dial out immediately because they're like, yeah, I don't understand all that stuff and it gets weird and crazy and, you know, start reading Revelation and I don't know who all those people are and all those different descriptions of things. But hang in there tonight if you're one of those. Because in this picture of Ezekiel 47, there is a real prophecy. In other words, what do you mean by that? It's a real proclaiming by God of what's gonna happen in the future. And there's a lot of that in Scripture. And this really is a prophecy about the end times and about a real place on earth, but it also has bearing on us in the meantime before we get to that place. And it's a prophecy that centers around the temple in Jerusalem. If you've been there, you know it's an extraordinary place. And it's a place right now of incredible tension because three faiths collide there, the Christians and the Jewish community and the Muslim community. They all really super collide in a pressure cooker that's not very big and it's full of incredible tension. In fact, you just feel it when you're walking around and you're in these little narrow corridors walking through the city center of Jerusalem that's inside the walls of the city. And as you're inside those walls, all of a sudden you'll come around a little crevice in a corner and go out of the Jewish quarter into the Muslim quarter and you gotta get searched again. And you're like, what just happened? And you start realizing there's a lot of pressure packed into this little space. It's kind of always been that way. This place has always been an enormously complex place in the history of the world. And it is the place that Scripture says where it's all coming down at the last day. Now that's pretty phenomenal if you really believe what Scripture's talking about, that when Christ returns and he's coming back, people, when he shows back up into our world, visible, identifiable, clearly seen by all as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and he comes back with power in his hands, he's coming to Jerusalem. Now, that's a crazy thought. I mean, that's just a wild thought. I mean, like, I know you know that. Most of you have been around church, and I've heard that, but we sort of put that back in the category of I'll worry about that later. I'll think about that when it happens. When the trump sounds and he does really come down and he sets his foot down on the Mount of Olives and he splits the mountain in half, then I'll really think about that then. But imagine the reality of Christ showing up on the planet and showing up specifically, personally, breaking out of his timelessness into time and into space. And some of what happens is told in Ezekiel 47 about that day. And it's pretty amazing what takes place. In verse 1, it says, "The man brought me back," this is Ezekiel talking, "to the entrance of the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. The water was coming down from under the side of the temple, south of the altar." And don't get too lost in the directional changes here. Just kind of stay with the main theme. "He then brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside to the outer gate facing east, and the water was flowing from the south side." So to put that down into simple terms, the temple faced east, but the water is flowing south. And so if you get into Jerusalem, into the Temple Mount, into the area where the temple was, and now there is a mosque that sits there, from the south is where this water is flowing. Verse 3, "As the man went eastward, with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits. That's about 1,500 feet. And then he led me through water that was ankle deep." So water's coming from the altar It's coming under the threshold. It's coming out of the temple, and it's flowing south. And the guy who's with Ezekiel says, let's measure the water. And he pulls out a measuring line, and he marks off 1,500 feet as they walk together. And as they're walking from the temple towards the south, the water's ankle deep for 1,500 feet as they walk together. Verse 4, he measured off another 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee deep. He measured off another 1,000 and led me through water that was up to the waist. And he measured, verse 5, another 1,000, but now it was a river that I could not cross. The man is leading Ezekiel to the deep end. And after they've gone three measures of 1,500 feet, all of a sudden this little trickle that was sort of deep, that got a little bit deeper, that got a little bit deeper, not too far from the temple going south, the water has become a river, which he describes as one I could not cross. So, you know, I don't know how bold you are and how good a swimmer you think you are and what that means to you. I think I could cross the Chattahoochee River. I may be a little downstream by the time I get on the other side, depending on where I choose to cross. But I think I could get across it. I'm not 100% confident in that, but I'd give it a good shot. But there are other rivers I've seen in my life that I'm thinking, I'm not really sure I'm up to swimming across that. And that's what Ezekiel was looking at. He said it was a river I couldn't cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. And he asked me, this man, I love this question, son of man, do you see this? Okay, A, it's a prophecy. B, this guy has taken him up, as we'll see in a second, to heaven. He's showing him the temple. He's telling him about specific details about how things are gonna happen. Now he's talking about a river. Now he's talking about water that's ankle deep, knee deep, waist deep. And now they're in this huge river, and the guy looks at Ezekiel and he says, do you see this? Now, that's a weird question when you're in a river all of a sudden that you can't cross, and someone asks you, do you see it? Do you see this river that we're in? You need to pause on that question tonight because it's one of those that's so obvious that I have to ask myself, why in the world would he ask him that? And why in the world would the Spirit of God put that question in Scripture for me, being as obvious as it is? Then he led me back to the bank of the river. Verse 7, when I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. And he said to me, this water flows toward the eastern region, and it goes down into the Araba, where it enters the sea. So if you know your geography, and some of you are tracking with the story, if you go in the direction and the flow of what's happening here, the water is entering into the Jordan Valley, and eventually this river Ezekiel's in terminates at the Dead Sea. Has anybody in here been to the Dead Sea? I know they take a lot of tourists there. Let's just show it really, really high. How many of you got in the Dead Sea to float in the Dead Sea while you were there? Got tar on your feet, the whole thing. How many of you bought some of that stuff they sell you when you get there? Miracle Change Your Life cream made from salts from the Dead Sea. They sell it at Perimeter Mall. The people will hound you down the mall to try to get you to buy it, which is one good reason not to go there. I mean, I love the mall, but come on, I don't want the cream. Thank you. No, I'm good. I'm fine without the cream. I'm happy. Thank you. I just came to go get a card. That's where they are. It empties into the sea. And check this phrase out. This is the end of verse 8. And the water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. There will be large numbers of fish because this water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore from En Gedi to En Eglaim, and there will be places for spreading nets. The fish will be of many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. But the swamps and the marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Verse 12, fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will their fruit fail. Every month they will bear because the water from the sanctuary all the way from the temple flows to them, and their fruit will serve for food and their leaves for healing. In other words, in real time, taking Ezekiel 47, a day is gonna come where water is gonna come out of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, fill up the Kidron down into the Jordan River Valley again. It's gonna flow the, you know, 15 odd miles to the Dead Sea, which is dead. It is terminus. It has been that way for a long time. There's not a living thing in it or around it. Nobody's fishing. There are no plants or vegetation growing along the side. It is intensely salt water to the degree that when you get in, you just bob up to the top, kind of weird and crazy. And what the story is saying is so much water's coming, so much life is coming, that it's going to literally fill up the sea to the degree that it brings it back to life again. If you got a condo on the Dead Sea, you might want to rethink that investment, because the water's rising and life is coming from the sanctuary of God, from the temple of the living God, from the place where God decided was holy, the place not where men or politics or wars decided, but where God decided was the place for his worship on the earth. And from that original place, water will flow. And where the water flows, everything will live. I love the picture, because the picture to me is an invitation. The picture to me is long-term prophecy, I know, but it's prophecy that I'm very interested in, so I'm not gonna put it on the back shelf and say, well, I'll worry about that when it happens. I wanna have that in the front of my mind today to know that there's a day coming when Christ is returning, and if that really is true, that's gonna alter the way I walk on this planet. But I want to think about the implications of Ezekiel 47, and I want you to think about them with me tonight, because in the midst of them is an invitation for you and for me to take the plunge. We've all done it before. For some of you, it was to run your first marathon, and you finally just crossed over. You made an announcement to the family, your coworkers, and said, I'm going to do it. I've signed up. I've set my training. I'm committed. I'm in. I'm done. Now, before that, you'd run a little bit. You'd read Runner's World magazine. You'd maybe followed a marathon before. Your friend ran one. You talked about running one. Remember how many you talked about running? I might run that one. Or how many of you are talking about running a marathon right now? How many of you have been talking about running a marathon for a marathon? You've been talking about one of these days, but then there comes that moment and you say, I'm going to take the plunge. I'm in. For some of us, that's starting your own business. And you sort of waiting it out, waiting it out, waiting it out. The day comes and you say, okay, honey, we're gonna go for it. We're all in. For some of you, it's getting a place of your own or buying your first house. For some of you, it's adopting a child from some other continent. For some of you, it's asking her to marry you. And guys, you know what that's about. You know, you're standing there and you're thinking, okay, here I go. It's a little bit like what you were describing earlier. I'm jumping and I think the water's deep enough, but I'll have to figure some of it out in the air. But I've made a decision. I'm gonna take the plunge. I'm all in. And then when you get up the nerve to do it and you ask the question, she has to take the plunge with you. She's got to look back at you and say, this is the point where it's not going good, and you're like, this is taking too long, and I was hoping she was going to burst into tears and say, of course I will, of course I will. And finally she does, and she takes the plunge. And in that moment, for you and for me, there's several things that are true. There's a distant goal or a vision that you can see, but you know is still beyond your grasp. You're unsure, and there's uncertainty. For every single person who's ever taken the plunge, there's some degree of uncertainty. If there isn't, you didn't take the plunge. If somehow when you started your business, you'd already had $6 million sitting on the table and a board of directors that were all the heads of Fortune 500 companies, and your wife was incredibly supportive, and everything was going great, and someone had died and willed to you an office complex, and you were going to move into that, and it was already had the top of the line equipment in it, and the product that you'd actually discovered in your basement now was the hottest product on earth, and you were going to market it, nobody's going to look at you and go, oh my gosh, we'll keep you in our prayers. I mean, because they know you're not taking the plunge. That's not what we're talking about. But for that other person, it's like, you know what? We think we've got an idea here. I think I've got a little bit of capital enough to at least get me to the end of the diving board, and we're gonna go for it and see what happens. And that's when your friends around you say, hey, we got you on our prayer list, man. We're covering you. We're behind you. We're cheering for you, because there's uncertainty and there's a certain degree of the unknown out there. There's faith involved when we take the plunge. There's risk involved when we take the plunge. There is cost involved when we take the plunge. You guys know what I'm talking about. Before you say, will you marry me? You've scraped up all the cash you have access to on planet Earth and gone to a jeweler and bought the biggest ring you can afford. And that's not even the cost I'm talking about. You've counted up what it means to say no to every other person on the planet and to say yes with all of your heart to this person. And you know what that's going to require of you. And when you take that plunge, it is a costly step. But the thing that leads us all to do it is the possibility of an upside reward that dwarfs the nerves and the uncertainty and the I'm not sure if we can pull this off. And at some point, you glimpse enough of something that seems so valuable to you that you say, I'm gonna go for it. And that is true of faith. It's true of faith. People always say, well, the thing I don't like about faith or Christ or relationship with God is that I'm just not one of those people who's going to take a leap of faith. And it's like, of course you are. You drive to work on 400. You're taking a leap of faith every single day. I'm not kidding when I say that. I mean, I know it's funny, but it's true. You're going to ask her to marry you. You're taking a leap of faith. You're going to start your own business. You're taking a leap of faith. You're going to adopt a little baby from another continent. You're taking a leap of faith. You're going to buy that first house. You took a leap of faith when you said, no, we looked at our budget and we did everything and we read all the information. I know. And you were still counting on that you'd have a job 6 months from now, that you wouldn't get sick, that nothing of calamity would come your way, that the market would stay right, that the rates wouldn't change. You had all kind of variables you had to trust in before you took that step. And tonight, Christ, this Christ we've been singing about, this Christ of Revelation, this Christ who's standing in the midst of all of humanity and all of heaven as the only one worthy to take the seal, to open that book, to redeem all of us, and to open and usher a way for us to stand in the presence of God. That Christ is here. And what do you think he's gonna do? Say, hey, I got an offer for you, and it's not gonna cost you very much. You're not gonna have to feel unsure at all. You're not gonna have to take a risk. There's not going to be any unknown variables involved. I just need you to do this if you'd like to come with me. Of course not. If you've got to add it up, take a deep breath, collect yourself, and then make your move to take one of these plunges, then why wouldn't we take a deep breath and take stock of it all before we take a deep plunge with Christ and say, I want to be all in. I want everything there is of you. I want to experience everything you can experience. I want to know as much as I can know. I want to be transformed to the maximum degree that I can be transformed. I want to breathe the air of heaven as much as you can breathe the air of heaven. I want to walk on the water as far as I can walk on the water. I want to get out of the boat. I want to get into your world. I want to experience everything you are and everything you're about. And I know to do that, I got to take a breath and I got to jump because it is a little bit unknown. But I believe the upside reward of completely abandoning the shore and heading into the depths with Jesus is greater than staying in control and sitting in a beach chair watching waves for the rest of my life. There are three reasons that I think we need to think about tonight before we be willing to take the step. And the first one is that it's an invitation from a God who's massive, but he's also meticulous. This chapter 47 comes at the end of a long explanation, which we won't really get into. You can read it for your quiet time in the morning, starting in Ezekiel 40. Just read those seven chapters in the morning. It'll set you up for a really powerful, overcoming kind of day because it's really meticulous. I mean, look at verse 1 of chapter 40. It says, in the 25th year, if you don't have a Bible, just let me read it for you. In the 25th year of our exile, at the beginning of the year, on the 10th of the month, in the 14th year after the fall of the city, on that very day, the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he took me there. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that when you're going to Sunday school as a kid or you roll into a church at some point in your adolescence and the guy starts talking about that, you just check out. You're like, seriously? What was all that? And you know, so-and-so begot so-and-so begot so-and-so begot so-and-so begot so-and-so and he begot so-and-so and he lived to be 912 before he begot so-and-so and then they begot so-and-so who lived to be 732 and they begot so-and-so when they died in the year that so-and-so died and so-and-so was king when so-and-so became king, they begot so-and-so and you're like, what is the point? Just get to the end of the begots and tell me what is it all about? And that's kind of what you start feeling here. Verse 2 gets a little clear. In the vision of God, he took me to the land of Israel and set me on a very high mountain on whose south side were some buildings that looked like a city. Maybe they were a city. And he took me there, and I saw a man whose appearance was like bronze. Maybe he was made of bronze, but he looked like bronze. He was standing in the gateway with a linen cord and a measuring rod in his hand. Why? Because we're going to measure some stuff, bro. Welcome to the vision, and welcome to prophecy. I hope you like measuring, because that's what we're going to do today. We're going to measure stuff. Now, I would have freaked out and been thrilled about that. Give me a couple tape measures, and I'm happy for a while. I like measuring things. Some of you, not so much, but I don't know about Ezekiel, but that's what the agenda was. The man said to me, son of man, look with your eyes, verse 4, and hear with your ears and pay attention to everything I'm going to show you, for that is why you have been brought here. Tell the house of Israel everything you see. I saw a wall completely surrounding the temple area. The length of the measuring rod in the man's hand was 6 long cubits, each of which was a cubit and a hand breadth. And he measured the wall, and it was 1 measuring rod thick and 1 rod high. So just chew on that for your devotion in the morning. It'll set you up for a powerful, powerful day, something you want to share with your coworkers as soon as you get to work. I was in the Word of God today, and the wall, good to know, is a rod and a half wide. It's a rod and a half high. They're like, what wall, bro? The wall. The wall at the city. It looked like a city. There was a bronze man with me, and he had a cord and a stick. And we started measuring stuff. Started with the wall. The wall's a rod and a half wide. Oh, the rod is six cubits and a half. A cubit and a hand breadth. Cubits from here to here and a hand breadth. So that's that right there. 6 of those. You go 7 chapters of that. You non-mathematical types, you creative artsy types, you're out. You're gone by now. Architecture, you're still in. You're like loving it. You're like, okay, right, I'm gonna get some CAD out and draw this thing. This is awesome. You know, but the point is, by the time you get to 47, and by the time the story really gets ready to happen, you've gotten all these dimensions, and I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know. Am I supposed to build a scale model? I don't understand all that exactly, but I do know this. I know what it says to me is that God is massive, but he's also meticulous. He really cares about every single thing. He knows how thick your walls are. The one you got up between you and him, he knows how thick that wall is. He knows how high the wall is that you've got up trying to protect you. He knows how thick the walls are between you and your neighbor or you and your friend or you and your family member. He knows your name. He knows where you live. He knows your address. He knows your PIN number. He knows everything there is. He knows the information on that little strip on the back of your credit card. He knows all the details, and he orders all the details. He's in the details, and I know some sometimes the details go crazy and we're not sure about how all that works. But God is saying, I'm massive, but I am meticulous. And I want you to know that before you go in the deep end, that you're going into the deep end with a God who knows everything about you and has planned everything for your life. The good and the bad, the joy and the sorrow, somehow is in the hand of God for a purpose that will bring life everywhere it goes. I watched Soul Surfer on the plane coming home from Europe Friday. Then I saw some friend of mine tweet, and he said he watched it on a plane and he cried, and I thought that was weird. He is a man. I wasn't expecting that. So I decided to watch it. 15 minutes into the movie, Shelley leans over to me to tell me something, takes her things off, and she's like, whatever. And when she does, I promise you, I'm trying to get the tears off my face before she turns around. 15 minutes in, I'm crying. I cried no less than 6 times through the movie. Ripped my heart out. Incredible film. Loved it. Moves me. Maybe it was just me and my friend on Twitter. And the premise of it, as you know, is simple. A teenage, up-and-coming surfer gets her arm bit off, barely survives because she's in a remote part of Hawaii surfing, goes on to become a pro surfer, goes on to have a movie made about her, which is never going to happen to me. Or you. You joined that when it was about me, but I mean, come on. Nobody's going to make a movie about any of us. Nobody's going to be flying on a plane from somewhere to somewhere watching a movie about you or me. And I don't know this girl. Some folks here know her, and I don't know what she would say tonight about that day or about what happened there. But I thought about it because she asked in the movie, you know, if Jeremiah is true and God knows the plans he has for me, she asked this to her youth pastor type person. How is this a part of God's plan? And man, when that question comes, you just hit the brakes in the movie because you know what? You can't Christian your way around that question. Come on. You can't bumper sticker that one. That's like right there. And the person in the movie didn't have an answer, and I wouldn't have had an answer. I wouldn't have tried to gloss it over and say, oh, well, you know, it's gonna be great. But I would have had a foundation under me, and I would have believed, and I would have tried in time to encourage any person to believe that I don't know why things happen the way they happen either. And I don't understand why a lot of things happen the way they happen. But I know that there is a river that is flowing from the heart of God. And if you get in it, if you get in it, and even if a shark bites your arm off and you're in that river, where that river goes, everything lives. And with one arm, you can have a movie made about you. And you can proclaim hope to the world. If you're in that river, life comes. And in that river is a God who's meticulous. It's not all about our vacation. When we landed the other day, it was a weird time of day, and we didn't know what time it was anyway, and we decided we were hungry, even though it wasn't a normal time to go and eat, so we went and ate, and we decided last minute to eat, and when we decided at the last minute, we decided between two places, and we kind of randomly said, okay, let's do this, and we're here, we're not there, so let's do this, so we pulled here, we go there, we get in there, we sit in this booth over here, guy walks up to the booth, random time of day, not your normal time of day, and he says, how are you guys? I'm going to be your server. He tells us his name, and then he kind of looks funny at Shelly and me for a second, and he goes, Passion City Church. That's us. How you doing? He tells me his name. He goes, I'm doing a lot better now. He goes, pretty weird that you'd come in here and sit in this booth today in my section. And we had a little interaction. I won't say his name. He might be in the building right now. we had a little interaction in that moment, and I just kind of stepped up into it, and it wasn't like, okay, well, I feel like, you know, I have a word from God. I didn't have a word from God, but I did have an encouragement. I said, you know what? I think the reason we're here, because he kept coming, each time he come back by, because it's really kind of weird today. Another leader in the city came, was at my table earlier today, and now you guys are here, and this is just kind of weird that on the same day you guys would be here. That's just interesting. He'd come back around again. It's kind of weird that that guy was here earlier, and y'all are here now. It's kind of interesting thing. And I think all we finally ended up making of it was this, that God is on the case. And God wants you to know today that he is for you and that he's at work in your life. And he's here tonight, he'd tell you. That's about all that was said. But he said, you know what? I think you're right, and I needed to know that today. And I thought about it a day later, and I thought, how interesting that at the wrong time of day to be eating, at a choice between a couple of different options, narrowed finally down to two, the car's moving, you know, 60 miles an hour, so all this is happening in pretty quick time, decisions made, little, you know, three people in the car, little vote, this, that, okay, here we are, here we sit, now we're here, and up he walks. This, my friends, is the meticulous God of all creation putting together the fine details, not just the major details, but the little details of life to put us in the right place at the right time all the time so that we can know and be alive to know that God is at work all around us. And whenever we lose sight of that, whenever we miss that moment, we miss the sensitivity to the smallest little detail of what God is doing. That's when we cease to live, right then and there. Oh, you can still go to the restaurant. You can still have the meal. You can still order your favorite thing. You can love it, love it, love it. Get a refill on your iced tea, and you can leave and say, that was wonderful, and not have lived because you missed that little moment where God showed up. The God of all creation showed up and said, this was a moment. You're like, Louie, I think you might be reading into a little coincidence, bro. I think, it just happens that way. Didn't happen that way here, because this guy had a stick and a piece of string. And he went with the stick and the string with Ezekiel and said, let's measure this pole. This is the pole of the stage at Passion City Church, Ezekiel. We're going to measure it. Write this down. Tell the church. Pole, six of these poles. We're going to measure from pole to pole. Hold the string, Ezekiel, and we're gonna, why? Because God is inviting you into rushing waters. And to be completely out there with it tonight, it is not safe completely and totally where he is. Because it'll wash away little dreams, it'll wash away earthly trophies, it'll wash away human ambition, it'll wash away a lot of stuff, and it will definitely wash away that sense that I am in control of my destiny. But the news is that we're not in control of our destiny to start with. There's a very specific God who's very massively loved you and committed himself to you. So that on a day that he appointed, at a time that he chose, by his order and authority, on that same Temple Mount, Christ was led out of the city down a road called the Via Dolorosa, to a place where he was crucified for you and me, so that the water could start flowing from the throne of God. And that day was so set in stone that no one could change it. Christ gathers himself, everything he's got, and he takes that cup the night before and he says, if There's no other way for the water to flow. Then I'll do it. And he pulls everything he has into focus. And he takes the plunge. And there's no turning back. He said it is finished. But to say that, he had to be all in. And that's how it works. And if he's all in, and I'm only in up to here, I'm never gonna know what he was thinking about when he gave it all for me. These next few weeks are about leaving the shore, taking a step or a leap, if you will, into Christ to say, I want you and I want life and I want to be in a current that's stronger than me, a river that's bigger than me. I want to be in a kingdom that's bringing life everywhere it goes.